This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you for being with us today. Tuesday afternoon, just a few blocks from our studios here at WNYC in Lower Manhattan, a man drove a pickup truck down a crowded bike path for almost a mile, striking several cyclists and killing 8 people. 11 other people were injured. WNYC reporter Jim O'Grady was on the scene within 30 minutes, and he's here with me now in the studio. Jim, thanks for being here.
Sure, Todd.
I mentioned that this attack happened just a couple of blocks from here on the West Side Highway bike path. You were there very quickly. Tell us what you saw and what happened.
Well, by the time I got there, the police had already sealed off the scene, so we had to piece it together through eyewitnesses who had emerged from that area. And what we heard was Eugene Duffy, he's a chef. He works at a restaurant right next to the bike path. And we should let listeners know this is Lower Manhattan, a beautiful bike path going along the Hudson River, and he was leaving work. He heard a commotion, turned around, saw this van driving at high speed on the bike path, which is protected and off the roadway, so it should not be happening. What he saw, to his mind, was a driver intent on killing people. He was driving at a high speed. He was going in a straight line, and this witness, Eugene Duffy, could hear bodies and bikes being mowed down. And then he heard or saw the truck crash into a school bus, heard shots, saw high school students fleeing. Stuyvesant High School is right there. And then he himself got out of there. I also spoke to a college student. Borough of Manhattan Community College is there. This guy was finishing up from studying. He was crossing a pedestrian path, looked down on the scene, and we heard this from several people, saw bodies, two of them. They were covered with blood and they were not moving. And he said he stood there on the bridge and with tears coming out of his eyes.
Because it was one of the very terrifying incidents that I have ever watched, especially in this New York City, right? So, yeah, it was like a very bad experience that I saw.
The suspect's been identified as Saifulo Saipov from Uzbekistan. He got out of the car, was shot by NYPD police and then apprehended. Mm-hmm. What do we know about him?
Well, as of now, officials believe Saipov was living in New Jersey, and they say that's where he rented the Home Depot truck used in the attack. They say he's originally from Uzbekistan, and that's a post-Soviet republic that borders Afghanistan, and that he came to the U.S. legally in 2010. As you say, he's now in critical condition after being shot in the abdomen. He's being held in a New York City hospital, though police won't say which one. And right now, the NYPD says it's working to sort out what motivates a man to mow down bikers and pedestrians the way he did.
Well, officials quickly labeled this a terrorist attack on Tuesday. Here's New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio just hours after the attack.
Let me be clear that based on the information we have at this moment, this was an act of terror and a particularly cowardly act of terror.
And this morning, the counterterrorism chief of the NYPD, John Miller, shared more information at a press conference.
Based on the investigation overnight, it appears that Mr. Saipov had been planning this for a number of weeks. He did this in the name of ISIS, and along with the other items recovered at the scene was some notes that further indicate that.
New York City officials there. Jim, what do we know about the attack?
Well, initially, they came to that conclusion that it is terrorist-inspired because witnesses and officers on the scene heard Saipov saying, "God is great," in Arabic. And now, of course, that alone is not proof of anything. But police are uncovering new evidence. They now say that Saipov left handwritten notes that said the Islamic State will endure forever. And that's significant because that phrase is considered a kind of calling card for ISIS-inspired attacks. In fact, last year, an ISIS magazine encouraged its followers to take trucks and do bodily harm to people in public places and said specifically, leave handwritten notes with that phrase. Other things we know is early this morning, FBI agents and police raided Saipov's apartment in Paterson, New Jersey, where he lived with his wife and two kids. And NYPD detectives have been collecting security video all along the highway that the suspect used before entering the bike path, killing 8 people.
We've seen a pattern before after similar attacks in Europe and to some extent here in the United States, where investigators, if they suspect a connection to terrorism, try to piece together whether that's an ordered connection, part of a larger plot, or somebody who is inspired on the internet as sort of a lone wolf, may have had sympathies with ISIS, but was not in contact with them.
Yeah, that apparently seems to be the case. And, you know, just as an aside, what is the significance of the place he chose? It's in this bucolic stretch of an esplanade along the Hudson River. It's in the shadow of the World Trade Center. The attack went down at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a blue sky day that was eerily reminiscent of the weather during 9/11. And in fact, that area has been beautified since 9/11 and as a reaction to those terrorist attacks to sort of make it a place of life again. So one wonders, was the idea to take this beautiful place, one of the most beautiful places in all of New York City, and turn it into a place of horror?
And what about the reaction of New Yorkers who were around the scene?
So obviously people were stunned and upset on the scene. There's just flashing lights and everywhere, emergency vehicles, parents taking their children out of school and bringing them home. You could see that they were obviously shaken. On the other hand, it's a busy New York neighborhood. A lot of people live there. A lot of people work there. People were coming home from their jobs. They were stopping into the Whole Foods to get their dinner, let's say. And it was also Halloween. And the annual Greenwich Village Halloween Day Parade is a huge deal in New York City. Thousands of people go to it. So at the same time that this tragedy was unfolding, a few blocks away, I was watching Little Bo Peeps and Witches in Witch Hats, just kids trick-or-treating, people heading up to the parade. I interviewed a werewolf, Todd, and the werewolf told me that he was not going to let this, quote, ruin my day.
There was an increased police presence at the Halloween parade, but it went off as scheduled.
It went off as scheduled. It might have been a little less well-attended, but that certainly added to the surreal aspect of all this. You know, Governor Cuomo said what officials often say, get back to normal life, don't let this disrupt the life of a thriving city. And it seemed that that was occurring almost simultaneously with the attack itself, that people were going about their business. You know, it's sort of the power of daily life to resume its rhythms no matter what.
Jim O'Grady with WNYC on the scene of yesterday's attack on the West Side Highway bike path here in New York. Jim, thanks for coming in to update us.
Thank you, Todd.
As we mentioned earlier, officials are investigating the New York attack as an act of terrorism. With us to explain what's known about the suspect and where the investigation is likely to go from here, Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School in New York. Karen, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What do we know now about the suspect, Saifullah Saipov, that's important to investigators and what they'll be looking at as they try to piece this crime, this alleged terror attack together?
We know when he entered the country in 2010. We know the various jobs that he's held as truck driver, as Uber driver. We probably know much more about his family and friends than we knew before. We knew he had a green card. They aren't telling us a lot about his network. I think that's intentional. So we don't know as much as we'd like to know right now.
Well, Karen, shortly after the incident happened on the West Side Highway bike path, politicians in New York and investigators were pretty quick to label this terrorism. Now investigators say they found notes at the scene pledging allegiance to ISIS, that they found information on his computer related to ISIS. So investigators will piece that together as well. But if investigators are treating this as a terror case, how is that different from just a crime? What does that difference mean to how they'll investigate and question Saipov, who they have in custody?
Since the last decade, actually, and notably with the underwear bomber, the Christmas Day bomber that was intercepted, the law enforcement has had a two-tier approach to interrogation with terrorism suspects, and they use it very sparingly. But what they do is they have intelligence officers and others talk to him first without having read him his Miranda rights, and then they read him his Miranda rights, and he's turned over to prosecutors and law enforcement, presumably for trial, or for prosecution if he wants to plead out. So that's what we can expect will happen here. They will get as much information from him as possible. They'll want to know who he was in contact with. Getting back to your other question, what he will be charged with, in this country, most terrorism suspects, and remember, we have very few attackers who have survived an attempted attack or an attack. So this is a rare case for us. We have the Boston bomber, and we have who succeeded in his attack. We have the Chelsea bomber who did not succeed in his attack here in New York. And they will be charged with a variety of counts of terrorism, including material support for terrorism. In most of these cases, officials try to prove a link between the defendant and a foreign terrorist organization. And as we have developed into the ISIS years, what that means to have a link to a foreign terrorist organization has become more and more amorphous. Because as you heard officials and law enforcement saying yesterday, what exactly does it mean that he said he was doing this on a note, or that the note said he was doing this in the name of ISIS? Exactly how tied to a foreign terrorist group do you have to be? And so that's one of the questions this will raise in the long term.
And we've seen this question from attacks not only here in the United States, as you mentioned, but also from similar attacks in London and across Europe, where investigators try to separate the idea of an attacker directed by ISIS, given marching orders or directions told to go out and do an attack, versus someone who's inspired by the organization, reading the internet, and decides on their own to go out and execute an attack for the glory of the organization.
Right. I mean, self-radicalization is the persistent pattern among individuals who are indicted for and carry out ISIS attacks. And so how do you criminalize self-radicalization? What it's going to lead to is a different reading of the law. Material support, which used to be, you know, providing money, providing weapons, providing other things that could facilitate an attack or an attacker. Now, it is a very different thing to say these individuals are self-radicalized and have decided in their violent quest to tell themselves what to do and to order themselves what to do. So, yeah, that is a conversation I'm sure has been going on for since the beginning of these ISIS cases, which was 2014.
Karen, let's get back to the attack itself. What do you see in the apparently rudimentary nature of this attack? A small rented truck driven down a bike path at a high rate of speed, but no other weapons, apparently, at least that we know about, on the suspect's person. If he had guns, they may have been fake. A fairly simple and rudimentary attack.
Yeah, that's both the good news and the bad news. It's simple and rudimentary, meaning that it doesn't look like this was a big sell, a big plot. It doesn't look like this was necessarily directed and trained for in any sophisticated way. The bad news is how lethal it can be for anybody to just take something as simple as a vehicle and decide to ram down others, pedestrians or those on bikes. But what we have seen is this is the call that the ISIS online network has made, which is you need asking individuals who support ISIS to take something this unsophisticated. This is not the first time we've seen a rental truck involved in an attack. And so I think, you know, a lot of focus is going to be on how easy it is to rent a truck and who gets to, and are there penalties for those who rent trucks without thinking about who they're renting them to. Again, it can't be their responsibility, but that's the way law enforcement will begin to think about this.
Karen Greenberg, Director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School in New York. Karen, thanks again.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.